Ecclesiastes is a wonderful book. Lots of people don't understand it and think it's kind of a bummer, but it's not. And I'll talk about a lot of the stuff during Midrash. What I want to talk about today are the feasts. Moedim, they're both historical and they're also rehearsals. So as we go through the feast, we're rehearsing what's coming up. The thing about reading Ecclesiastes during Sukkot is what it does is it gives you the big picture. And it's a time where you get out of your house, you get into a temporary dwelling, you read this book of perspective, and the whole thing is by way of giving you perspective on your life and on the world and what's going on. That's what's going on in this feast. The feasts are older, by the way, than the Torah. The feasts do not originate with Moses. They're much older than that. For example, Abraham left Ur, which is his home, and he lived in tents for a period of time. The same thing with the binding of Isaac, which happens at Passover. So all of the feasts are far older than the Torah. What Moses did is wrote them all down so that we can study them. And the thing about Sukkot that it's supposed to teach you, as Ecclesiastes is teaching you, is this is not your home. This is a way station in your life. You come into this world through the normal mechanism of being born. You go through this world and you go to normal natural death, and then you go on. And the whole point of both Ecclesiastes and Sukkot is to remind you that this is not permanent. This is not all there is. There is much more. And the idea here is don't get attached to this and lose track of what the big picture is. That's what's going on in this feast. One of the things that God says about this world, and Ecclesiastes says too, is make this world as good as you can make it, but don't assimilate. So Jeremiah, for example, says exactly that in Jeremiah 29, verse 4. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles, that's us, whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there and do not decrease. But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf. For in its welfare, you will find your welfare. So as we go through life, this temporary city where we're in exile, we are to make it as good as it can be made. But we're also not to assimilate. We're not to regard this as all there is. And again, that's the message of both Ecclesiastes and Sukkot. The book of Hebrews says the same thing, by the way. Hebrews 11, talking about all of the heroes of the faith. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised. In other words, Abraham was given a promise when he left Ur. That promise was renewed to Isaac and Jacob. It was renewed to Israel. So all these died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they have been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had the opportunity to return. In other words, if they didn't realize that this was all sojourning, they could have gone back. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. So the whole purpose of getting out of your house and all of that is entirely by way of reminding you annually that this is not your home, that there's something else beyond. And we read Ecclesiastes for the same reason. That's what the preacher in Ecclesiastes is saying. There's a code word in Ecclesiastes, you've all heard it, under the sun. Under the sun means in this present world. There is something beyond under the sun, which is what we're looking for and going toward. So let's talk about where we are and what the status is of the world as we observe it right now. And let's look at that from the perspective of a bigger picture. Right now, everything's a mess. I think pretty much everybody in the congregation recognizes that things out there are a mess. What's happened is, as we become successful, what we do is we lose the script. And we start to focus on the world, because the world is doing good things for us, and we lose track of where we are. Does anybody here not know what a feedback loop is? In engineering terms, a feedback loop is where you have some machinery or an electronic system, and you have a receiver. The system puts out a signal, the receiver receives a signal and feeds back to the sender so that it can adjust. Now, you've all heard when somebody holds a microphone up to a speaker and it goes, wah! That's what's called positive feedback. So the receiver says, I heard you, give me more. And what that does is it just keeps increasing, and if you don't get the microphone out of the way, what'll happen is you'll blow your speakers, because there's no limit to how much it goes up. Negative feedback is, I have heard you, it's loud enough, turn it down. Ah, you just turned it down. Now it's a little bit too low, turn it up. Ah, now it's a little bit too high, turn it down. That's a negative feedback loop. And that's how things stay stable. Basic engineering stuff. You all understand that now, right? Well, what happens in humanity is there's a positive feedback loop. Remember, positive feedback loop just keeps going up and up and up and up until the speakers blow. And by the way, it's in Jeremiah again. In Jeremiah 5, there's an appalling and horrible thing. This has happened in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely. The priests rule in their direction. My people love to have it so. But what will you do when the end comes? Now, what that's saying is, you've got false prophets that are telling people what they want to hear. The priests are saying, wow, these false prophets are speaking for God. The people are saying, oh, we love to hear that. So you get more false prophets, and the priests reinforce it, and the people pick it up, and it just goes on and on. And what you wind up with is Babylonians all over you, because God finally says, heck with that, and sends you into exile. Or where we are right now, which is up to our hips and weirdos. And that is the result of a long period of positive feedback. We don't have prophets today, but we've got preachers. What you've got is preachers who preach what their congregation wants to hear. They're called prosperity preachers, they're called good news preachers, etc. And all they tell you is the good stuff that you want to hear. And they draw big crowds because you're telling people what they want to hear. And so they keep preaching it. Because if they preach God's word correctly, what happens is people say, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to be told what a miserable sinner I am. I don't want to be told how lousy things are. I'm not going to go to that church anymore. And pastors and priests and so forth are human just like everybody else. They got families to feed. So what they do is they wind up preaching what the audience wants to hear. And they say, well, you know, all that stuff in the Torah, all that old law stuff, that doesn't apply to you. You don't have to read that stuff. All you have to do is whatever all you have to do is. But what they do is they ignore parts of Scripture that don't sit well on the ears of their congregation, because God is telling them, what you're doing here is not right. And so what you have in the church now is a positive feedback loop, which is going up and up and up and up and up and up until we hit destruction, just like what happened to Israel. And by the way, that's the purpose of the feast, is to let us know that this stuff is cyclic. The stuff that happened to Israel is the stuff that's going to happen to you if you do the same stuff. That's the whole purpose of this cycle of feasts, if you will. Now, how do we break that? Let me give you a little history. You know what powered the Reformation? The printing press. What happened in the Reformation is the church lost control of all of the information. People used to be killed by the church for having copies of the Bible in a native language. People died to get the Bible to you in English. That's because the church, which was thoroughly corrupt by then, wanted to have total control of the information. They wanted to be able to set the story and set the narrative. The printing press broke that. What we've got going on now is, up until now, you had major investments required to do mass communication. You had to have printing presses, and you had to have radio stations. You had to have television stations. A lot of money in order to communicate. So what happened was the system, the world, if you will, had control of the means of communication. They had control of information. If you wanted news, you had to go to a New York Times, CBS, NBC, whatever. So what the enemy does is he gets into all of those organizations and he starts feeding you a narrative. Did you notice before the internet that you could turn to any news source, CBS, NBC, whatever, and you got the same story? In fact, Rush Limbaugh made sort of a career out of that. He would get sound bites from all of the media, and they would all be using the same terms. For example, and this is an old one, when President Bush chose Cheney to be his vice president, the narrative was Cheney was the wise old man who gave Bush gravitas. And every news outlet was talking about gravitas. Didn't matter which one you turned into, you got the same message. So there was control of information. Where we are right now is control of information is breaking down. That's what the internet has done. That's what talk radio did before the internet got going. So analogous to the printing press, which broke the monopoly of the Catholic Church on information, what we have going on now is alternative media, internet, and so forth, which has broken the monopoly on information in our society. Reformation was a time of great disruption. There were wars fought over whether you were Catholic or Protestant. It was a tumultuous time, and it was caused by the loss of control, if you will, of the information by the Catholic Church. Where we are right now is in an analogous place. The system, whatever that is, and I'm not going to try and characterize that to you, but basically they've lost control of information. And what you're seeing right now, cancel culture, is an attempt to get control of information back again. It's not working. All of these things are attempts to get the narrative back to where everybody is, like eggs in a carton. It isn't working. So what we have now that we're entering into is one of two things. Thing one is God finally says enough and sends Messiah back, and he takes over the place, which would be wonderful. Or thing number two is we're going to go into a period like the Reformation, where you have mass foment, societies getting turned upside down, the whole place getting stirred with a stick. And out of that came Christianity. I mean, Christianity was earlier than that, but what do I want to call it? Protestant Christianity, if you will. And that freeing gave us the scientific and industrial revolutions. Talked about that before in here. Western science is specifically Christian. No other society in the world has ever done it. And it was specifically biblically based because the scientists, Newton and Leibniz and those guys, read the Hebrew Bible and said, God has told us that there's only one God. There's only one set of rules. We're made in the image of God. We should be able to figure this out. And you had the blossoming of secular science, the blossoming of the Industrial Revolution. And what then happens is, as things get better and better, institutions get better and better. That's the story of the Tower of Babel. Everybody's together. We're going to build this big institution. Well, what's happened with Christianity is we have also built big institutions. We want everybody to think alike. So we're going to do public schools. Everybody goes to the public school. If you don't go to the public school, you get arrested for truancy. We have mega churches. We have mega government. We have the Tower of Babel being built again. Just like the Catholic Church before the Reformation was it. Massive, big bureaucracy. Freedom of information destroyed that monopoly. What we're seeing here is freedom of information, if you will, is destroying the bigness of our institutions at this point. You've got explosions in homeschooling. People look at the industrial school and say, I don't want my kids in that thing. And of course, what the enemy does is it captures the industrial school, and we have drag queen story hour and all that kind of nonsense. And with the freeing of information, people are withdrawing from that. Institutions that we used to respect, take the FBI for example, used to be highly respected, not anymore. Again, this is a function of the freeing of information, because information is getting out. A friend of mine that I went to breakfast with for 30 years, recently passed, he got his news from television. And so we would talk about things, and I would tell him stuff that he had no idea was existed, because he was on the television news cycle. That's all breaking down now. And one of two things is going to happen, as I said before. We're either going to have an analogous thing to the Reformation, or Yeshua is going to say, okay, that's enough. They're not going to be able to get this and start over. So, where are we now? Well, Daniel tells us where we are now. You all remember Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue? You got this massive statue, and Nebuchadnezzar has this dream about it, and nobody can interpret it except Daniel. And the head is gold, the chest is silver, the torso down here is bronze, the legs are iron, and then the feet are iron mixed with clay. And he interprets it. Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold. And then we have the Persian Empire, which is the silver, and we have the Greek Empire, which is the bronze, and then you have the modern system starting with the Roman Empire, which is the iron. Where we are now, however, is iron mixed with clay. And what Daniel says about the iron mixed with clay is it's partially strong and it's partially fragile and brittle. Because iron and clay don't actually mix. So where we are right now is we've got iron. That's the various governments, communism, whatever, who rule everything with a rod of iron, to borrow a phrase, or our own government, which you've got now the FBI arresting people who are protesting at abortion clinics. That's the toes of iron. But in between, we've got the miry clay, which is all breaking down. It looks really strong in the toes, but it isn't stable, and it's going to break down, and something else is going to replace it. Now, in Daniel's interpretation of the dream, what happens is a big rock is cut from a mountain without hands and rolls down there and smashes the statue. That's Messiah coming back. And that may be what happens next. I don't claim to be a prophet, but as you look at things, it appears to me where we are is the mixed iron and clay, and the next thing on the scenario is the rock comes. And that may be the case. Or as I say, it may be we're going to go through another cycle here, and we're going to have another Reformation, and we're going to have another 500 years before that happens. I don't know. God knows and I don't. So the whole point of all of this, the Moedim, the feasts and so forth, is to give you perspective. Because remember, what Ecclesiastes does is Ecclesiastes is talking from head down and butt up, and all I see is the world. And boy, when all I see is the world, it's pretty grim. That's what the preacher's saying. And of course, the preacher pops up his head at the end and says, well, this isn't all there is, and you have great hope. So where we are in the feast cycle is the whole purpose of that cycle is to give us the understanding that this has a purpose. It is going toward a goal, and we are playing a part as it moves toward that goal, whatever our part may be. But the whole point is that under the sun is not all there is, and God has set up this cycle so that we have perspective as we're going through this world. We don't lose hope, and we don't get ground down by the world. That's the purpose of these Moedim. So, what do you do? What's your job? I don't know what your particular job is. But as the preacher said, do it with joy, whatever that is. But be of good courage. What he's saying is, all sorts of stuff is going to happen in this world. Some of it's going to be good, some of it's going to be bad. But be of good courage, because God has you here for a purpose. And as long as you remain here, that purpose is not complete. So understand that there is a purpose for your life, and all of this is going toward a goal that God is setting up. That's the first thing. Second thing is speak, talk, write. Information is no longer the monopoly of the system. You have a voice. Use it. Talk to people. Tell people who are hopeless and lost and so forth that there's a purpose to all this. And you may not be able to see it from where you are, but there is a purpose. And oh, by the way, if you want some teaching on that purpose, come to church. But the point is, you have a voice, use it. And then the last thing, to go back to Jeremiah, seek the good of the place where you dwell. Because in seeking the good of the place where you dwell, you yourself will prosper and your life will go better. So this world is a mess. There's no question about it. But what you cannot do or should not do, and you can if you want, but I'm suggesting real strongly that you don't, is you could withdraw from this and sit on your blessed assurance and wait to die. You've missed the point. As Jeremiah says, seek the good of where you are and try and do good within this place where you are, even though it's a cesspool. Do your best to do good, because in making this place better in any small way, what you'll do is you'll make yourself, your situation better. Now, I've got to say, occasionally that doesn't work and you wind up a lion chow, but even so, seek the good of the place where you are. And do your best to thwart the plans of the evil one. Don't call people by their preferred pronouns. Don't let them sterilize children, which is what the transgender thing is just sterilization of children. You're all too young to remember this, but in the South during the 30s and 40s, the eugenics movement, when they were sterilizing black women, you know, a black woman would go in for something and she'd get sterilized, and everybody's just horrified. That's what the transgender movement is, sterilizing children. It's the same thing, it's just got a different name. So do your best to thwart the plans of the enemy. Stick a stick in his spokes. Make his life difficult. And then be active in the community, politics, everything else. Yes. Everybody that's running is a toad. We understand that. Pick the least stinky toad and vote for it. There are no perfect candidates. So pick the one that stinks the least and vote for him. Again, seek the good of the place where you are, because in improving where you are, you yourself will do better. Jeremiah.